When you're at home, don't miss Black and Abdallah.
I got stories that'll raise the hair in your head.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
I'm rather looking forward to it.
Black and Abdallah.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome in to Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. So we're keeping our eyes on this Bears search, right? They're searching for a GM, for a head coach. This is going on for now. We're in the second week of this. George McCaskey spoke last Monday.
So it was Monday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So on the ninth day, they rested. On the ninth day, the Bears rested.
They're going to rest?
There were no interviews today.
Well, that they've announced to this point.
Okay.
Like, don't they usually at some point between 6 and 7 o'clock?
The schedule. There's nothing on the schedule for today.
That you know about.
That I know of, yes. Like, does that mean a Jim Harbaugh was interviewed? A Lewis Riddick was interviewed? Mm. Those that aren't connected to teams that would send out a release that would, you know, leak or something like that, right?
Off the beaten path.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone you're not aware of at
maybe
the moment.
Maybe a back channel Sean Payton.
There's a Bill Polian moving in the shadows.
Maybe Polian is sliding into someone's DMs.
Now, could you imagine the duo of Polian and George McCaskey going on like a heist to try and like pull off some kind of maneuver to get a back channel deal to pull off a coach that is the prized possession?
Could you Ocean's 11.
Could you?
We need Don Cheadle. We also need Brad Pitt. And maybe George Clooney, but he makes me uncomfortable.
He makes me uncomfortable.
Go Bears.
He makes me uncomfortable.
Go Bears. Matt and I talked about it. At one point, he asked me what I thought. And I said, I'm uncomfortable that you're even asking me the question. That's a coaching decision.
I need a mask.
Yes. And that's how we left it.
Right, right.
I need to be the George Bush mask. You can be Richard Nixon. Or would you prefer to be nuns?
No.
From the town.
Yes, no, I know. All right, so, you know, this is going on. We have 16 names that are now being interviewed for the GM role. We have 10 names for the role of the coach, but we have a name that was pulled out, so we're back to 25, right? We ballooned to 26 names, mm-hmm. but Ed Dobbs today has announced
he's pulling out
of the conversation for GM. So now we're back down to that core 25. 25 interviews for the Chicago Bears that they need to conduct to then find their next head coach, their next general manager. Now, the other piece of news today is Matt Eberflus, the Indianapolis Colts defensive coordinator, has accepted a second interview for Monday, the 24th. So make what you want about that. I would say this is also strange that they have already scheduled second interviews with an individual before completing the rest of the first round interviews for either the GM or the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like this whole process is completely backwards. They're already setting up second interviews when Todd Bowles, Byron Leftwich, Leslie Frazier, Dan Quinn, all have yet to speak with the Chicago Bears and have their interviews.
Well, they also haven't announced times or days of interviews for Ryan Poles from the Chiefs, Reggie McKenzie from the Dolphins, JoJo Wooden from the Chargers, Omar Khan from the Steelers, Rick Smith, the ex-Houston Texas general manager, or Rand Carthen from the 49ers. And they still have an interview tomorrow with Morocco Brown from the Colts. Now, I'm sure they're going to talk to Morocco Brown about Eberflus.
Right.
And maybe they like him, and maybe they announce a hiring.
A combo platter?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and this is all certainly possible, right? Behind the scenes, the plan could be coming together, and it could be smart, and it could be led by a football guy like Bill Polian, and things could be going great. But from what we know with the Chicago Bears organization, usually that's not the way it goes, right? Like, things usually don't make sense. It's a bit bumbling.
Mm-hmm.
Things get messed up. Bad hires are made. People get put in positions that they really shouldn't be in said positions, running things that they've never ran before. This has happened in the past for the Chicago Bears. So 25 interviews to conduct. They already are moving on to the second round in the first round of the head coaching carousel. Yet there are individuals who have yet to get their first interviews, even though they're going to move on to seconds, right? It's complicated. This is what I was thinking about. How long have you been married now?
8 years.
Okay, 8 years. Perfect. And when you got married, I was still single. I met my wife the year after.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was single 8 years ago, like, think about this. Back in the dating scene 8 years ago, and young guys, if you want to help us out, 312-332-3776. I know things have changed today. But 8 years ago, when I was dating and apps were in play on the dating scene,
yeah,
the one thing that I kept thinking about was this. The dating apps, it is so convoluted.
Oh, yeah.
And you have conversations with 4 to 14 different people,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to figure out what they're about, what they like, what you like, are you compatible, all this stuff. You have all these conversations going on at once, right? But you're not focusing in on any of them.
No.
It's all a complete mess. You can't focus. And the other thing that I noticed from 8 years ago when I was on the scene, on the apps and being out there and trying to meet a girl, was that not only was it convoluted because there's so much technology and so much connectability and everyone's having a conversation with everyone else,
mm-hmm.
is that there's always a better option. You know what I mean? Like, you walk into a bar, you see what's there.
Yes.
And you could say, okay, that's the girl of my dreams. I need to talk to her, right?
That's what I did.
And you go up to her and you talk to her. But when you're on an app and you have 4 different apps, you have all these available options at your fingertips,
mm-hmm.
there's always another swipe to be had.
Always.
You see what I'm saying? Like, the pool of availability
yeah.
is so deep.
Or you see a different app and you're on, let's say you're on Bumble also, you're like, oh, well, this person messaged me now.
Sure.
Like, there's always extra apps and there's endless apps and endless swipes and endless people.
And so, the point that I keep thinking about is this Bears situation. They have 25 interviews to lock down a head coach and GM. And they've got so many lines in the water trying to catch that fish, right? And mm-hmm. it's just so difficult, I feel, as if someone who's just consuming the information that they are conducting all these interviews, it's a lot that's out there. Now, the lists are good. Those are all the names you'd like to see the Bears to interview. But, like, when I was in that situation, having all these multiple conversations, knowing that there's always a better option out there from their perspective and from my perspective, right? Like, it just seemed very difficult. And this is 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I can only imagine if you're a young guy, you're in your 20s,
you're in your 30s, you're single.
Like, think about it. You go to a bar now and you see young people sitting there, they're all on their phone swiping because they're trying to find the next person. But that conversation lasts, what, a few messages back and forth, and then you're on to the next one.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to focus in on someone in today's current technologically savvy landscape that there's so many different dating apps and all this stuff. And you put it all together, and it's convoluted. It's tough to focus in on a sole single person and make a connection. I just wonder, like, as we see all these names, and each day we get more names, and you mention all the GM candidates that don't even have a date for their interviews, I just wonder if this list from both sides, the head coach and the GM, is just so extensive that it will convolute the process here in trying to find a GM and a head coach.
Well, I feel like I don't think this is bad for the Bears. I think interviewing as many people as possible, going on as many dates as possible, is a good thing. I think that scheduling second interviews might be, jumping too much, might be saying I love you too quickly.
Meeting the parents too soon?
Yeah. Like what, you met the girl on Black Wednesday, you're already going to Thanksgiving dinner.
It's a little quick.
Yeah, exactly. So,
welcome to cuffing season.
Yeah, so to me, I feel like they should have done all the interviews. Hired, you can still talk to coaches. I've got no problem with you talking to coaches because you got to figure out, like we mentioned with Joe Schein and with Brian Daboll, right? If they want to come in together because they're both from the Bills, they can do that, right? Now with Morocco Brown with the Colts and maybe Matt Eberflus, maybe they come in together. So there's nothing wrong with interviewing with head coaches. I don't think that's a problem. I think scheduling the second interview might be a little premature before you've hired a GM, because you still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 interviews that you have on record that you're going to do with GMs. Then you probably want to do the second interview with the GMs,
right?
Then bring in the coaches. So yeah, this might take a while, but I think that if your candidate is still playing, it's not a problem, right? Like if your candidate is Leslie Frazier, if your candidate is Brian Daboll, if your candidate is, I mean, obviously Brian Flores isn't playing anymore, but some of these guys can sit back and wait for the right job if they want to. Like, there isn't a draft coming up here, like, in the next couple days or anything like that. But I think that you're right. It is a little premature to be having the second interview with the coach, but I don't think there's anything wrong with casting a wide net of GM candidates, because I think you want your person. Right. And I will say that you go on this journey. I'll use bachelor terms from the bachelor and the bachelorette. This is a journey. And this is, you got to find your person. And you don't want to be doing this again in 4 years or in 5 years or in 6 years or 7 years. You don't want this. You think you as a franchise have found your person when it comes to your quarterback. So now you want to find your person as a GM, and then you want to find them their person as a head coach. You don't want this to be Bachelor in Paradise, where people are coming in left and right, and you've got all the hotties on the beach, and you're going on dates, and you're going to the suites, and you're doing all that kind of stuff. No, thank you. You want to find your person. And if that means going on dates with 28 different people, then you go on dates with 28 different people.
What's the difference between Bachelor in Paradise and Temptation Island?
So Temptation Island, you get to the island as a couple, and then you're split up for temptation.
Okay.
Whereas Bachelor in Paradise is just to up your Instagram followers.
All right, just people on the Bachelor show.
It's just
the
people that have, like, occasionally people will show up from Bachelor in Paradise, and I'm like, who are you? And they're like, I was kicked off the first night of Matt's season. And I'm like, what? Why are you here?
That's why it's the best one.
It is. It is, because it's so reckless.
See, you Bachelor guys, the Bachelor universe, I don't get that. My wife watches stuff.
It's called Bachelor Nation.
No, I know, but like I'm well-versed in like Summer House and Vanderpump and the Real Housewives, but
yeah.
I don't get the ABC Bachelor universe that you got over there.
I mean,
the extended Bachelor
it's
universe.
It's basically that, but for hipsters, because like we've been on the original, like you guys are seeing the next the next hot TikTok vid, and we're the OGs.
What?
Here
what
we're the OGs
mean?
Paying $100 to go see someone at the Chicago theater.
Well, okay, and guys, Eric and Tyler are producing tonight's show. Am I wrong with the confusion of the dating scene now with apps and
dude,
and how convoluted it is to have a conversation, the same dumb conversation, getting to know someone 100 times over, trying to find these girls?
I'm so glad I wasn't on apps. I was never, ever on apps.
How are you?
Well, and Eric, you've been married.
Yeah, no, I've been with my wife for 11 years. We've been married
right,
three. So, I was out of
the app game.
You
weren't in that. Yeah.
I imagine those conversations, all of them just molding together.
Yes.
So when they're doing these interviews, can they differentiate the answers?
Open it up and read us some of those conversations.
Tyler,
how are things on the scene?
The apps, the pandemic definitely made them boom. I think the pandemic was good for the apps. But no, it's like you're 100% right. Like, it's the same thing, and it's just the waiting game. All right, who's going to respond first?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is.
And then eventually, they go, not saying you specifically, but I'll put myself in that situation. It's like, you're like, oh, this seems like a good back and forth. We're playing tennis here. We got a conversation. She responds. I respond. She responds. I responds. And then you know, we get to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Oh, she gone. Ghost.
She went on a date with someone else. Yep.
She found someone over the weekend. That one's gone.
Poof.
Gone. Poof. Ghost. Like, how many times do you have that back and forth? And it's the same thing each and every time.
God. I was so glad that it was just like, you want to get dinner? Yeah. Okay, cool.
I know.
Let's get dinner.
But that's why, still, ready? For all the young people out there, the best way to do it is in person, face to face. That's the best way to accomplish whatever you want to get done.
Like I did, the old pen and paper. The old pen and paper.
Oh, you pulled the George McCaskey.
The old pen and paper. And off. You're cute. I'm with this girl. She's not great.
Circle yes or no.
I'd like to be with you. Call me tomorrow. Fold it up.
Shout out to Jonathan Hood.
And off to the hottie at the bar.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
We're talking football with you at 312-332-3776. It's Black and Abdallah weeknights right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. So we've been talking about the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
They have their search for their head coach, their GM. You were concerned that today was the day of rest.
Today
for
was
the
day of
Bears.
Rest. I said on the ninth day the Bears rested, but the Bears have just tweeted that they completed an interview candidate Rand Carthen.
All right.
And he ran so far away, is the director of player personnel for the San Francisco 49ers.
Are you serious right now?
What? You didn't think I knew you had that handy, did you?
I don't think you knew that I had that handy. All right. So, by my math now, they've conducted 17 of these interviews?
Sure, man.
Is that
like,
right?
At this point, are we just thinking a lot? Just say a lot.
17 of the interviews to conduct on way, trying to find the head coach and the GM as the Bears search.
It's the final countdown.
Well, I keep thinking of this. Remember, the Panthers did 17 interviews just for GM. You know? And I would think that they're... You know, they're heading in the... It's going to take a while to rebuild that team. I think the Bears are closer to competing than the Panthers are. But that team was... God-awful. God-awful.
They're both bad.
I would say they're both bad, but the Panthers
are
real, real bad.
Sure.
But the 49ers, Rand Carthen, that's a good team. That is a very good team.
Yeah, for sure. And they've been a good team for quite some time.
Yeah. And, you know, they're a team that... Didn't they have aligned their GM and head coach to have the same time of deal. And they gave them, I believe it was, at the time, it seemed like a long time. I think they gave them 5 or 7 year deals because they're like, this isn't going to turn around real quick. Like, this is going to take some time. And so if you're looking for someone to come in, the 49ers were in a bad spot when the new regime came in. And then they've rebuilt it and they're a playoff team and they have a chance to... If they beat the Packers, go to an NFC Championship game this weekend.
So Rand Carthen is who the Bears interviewed today for the GM role. We'll keep our eyes on it. It's Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app.
No days off.
I did not think that they would.
No days off.
They've been working on Sundays, Saturdays throughout the playoffs.
You've got two jobs this year. That's it.
Well,
two jobs.
This is their only job.
You have to hire a GM and a coach.
No,
two
I know,
jobs.
But like this is what they do.
Yeah.
You would expect them to continue to plow through these interviews until they get to the end of the list.
And if I'm the Bears, I mean, Pullian, what am I paying you by the hour here? Come on, let's go.
Well, haven't you noticed how slow he's working? Remember they said that they could only do two interviews a day? And that it's because Pullian's per hour. Hourly employee.
Pullian is setting interviews for 6 a.m. He's in the building. Now, football guys in general.
He's got the reader's eyes, got a cup of coffee.
No,
he's ready to go.
And these are football guys. They're usually, football guys are up at like 4:30 in the morning. Don't football guys have that alarm that goes off at 4:30? That's like a weird time.
Coaches. That's
it's
a
like
coaching
4:37.
Alarm. Coach's alarm.
Okay.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about this. I'm watching games over the weekend, the wild card round, and there was a quarterback who was fantastic. It was Joe Burrow. And I saw him play on Saturday night, and I thought to myself, you know, last year, out of the group of quarterbacks that entered the NFL draft, you had Joe Burrow, you had Justin Herbert, and you had Jalen Hurts. Those are really the three marquee names from last season. And we know that Justin Herbert, at a point in this last season, there was a peak point where people were like really into the way that Herbert was playing the game. And I know that the Chargers weren't as good as a team overall, mm-hmm. which kind of takes away from the brilliance that we saw from Justin Herbert. But you know, in that last game, that Sunday night game, the final game to win and get in for the Chargers, what Justin Herbert was able to do really told me and tells a lot of people, smart football people, like, this guy is legit. He can get it done at an elite level. Justin Herbert's the real deal. Now, watching Joe Burrow this season and what we saw from him last season, like, Joe Burrow's never lost. He only wins wherever he goes. Mm-hmm. High school, to LSU, to Cincinnati with the Bengals now, and they pull off the wild card weekend win over the Raiders. And this season, you know, Joe Burrow goes 34 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Last year, he threw 13 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He was injured. He only played in 10 games. And I start to think about last year's quarterback and how Justin Fields relates to what we saw from the three quarterbacks that were drafted last year. And I don't think that there is a comp, because he didn't have the success, even though it was in a shortened season, that Joe Burrow had. He didn't have the length of the season that we saw from Herbert, or the highlights that we saw from Herbert last year heading into his second year, because Herbert was a name that we talked about a lot heading into this football season. And then it was Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts really struggled in his rookie season. But again, when you look at the quarterbacks in his rookie year, Jalen Hurts had 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He played in 15 games last year. He ran the football a lot. Not as dynamic as a passer. His completion percentage in his rookie year was 52%. But this year, in his second year, 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Completion percentage is 61.3. So his completion percentage definitely got better from rookie year to his second year. I don't think Justin Fields is necessarily what we saw Jalen Hurts be in his rookie year. I think he's a little bit better. But I don't think what we saw from Justin Fields in his rookie year was as good as what we saw from Justin Herbert and either Joe Burrow and their progression through that one season heading into their second.
Yeah, but couldn't you say that Joe Burrow and Justin Fields could have the same second season? Like, Joe Burrow tore his ACL and was out and didn't play and just, you know, was coming to the facility, rehabbing, watching tape, you know, learning that way with the clipboard and not playing. Couldn't Justin Field take, would you be surprised if Justin Fields took that next step next year? Now, if you look at their draft, I mean, they drafted T. Higgins along with Joe Burrow that season. Then they drafted a linebacker, defensive end, a tackle, and another linebacker. They were shoring up their defense. Then this year, or the year Jamar Chase, they took Jamar Chase with their first round pick at 5.
Yeah.
Then they took a tackle, linebacker. Then they were back to defense. Defense. Then they took a kicker. Offensive line. I mean, that team is stacked. Like, they gave him a lot of help.
Sure.
T. Higgins is a good wide receiver. Jamar Chase is rookie of the year, like one of the best wide receivers, right? So I would say that if the Bears turnaround for me doesn't have to be as slow as people think, or some people think, right? I think it can be fast. I think if you've got Mooney is a good number two, if you go out, whether you draft or you trade for or you sign someone like Jamar Chase, a number one receiver who you know is just like Joe Burrow has said it, F it. I know Jamar's going to go up there and get it.
Yeah.
Like, just throw it. Jamar's out there somewhere. Just throw it up and get it. So I think if you can do something like that and then also shore up that offensive line in the draft, I think that Justin Fields could have a better year, because you've got some pieces on offense. You've got your number two wide receiver, like I said, in Mooney. You've got Montgomery. You've got Khalil Herbert, two good running backs. You need more production out of the tight end position for sure. But you also have some of the pieces to get it done. You just need, you need that number one wide receiver. You have to get that. You absolutely have to have that to be successful. Look at all these teams. I mean, look who has been a standout wide receiver. I know he's really good, okay? Probably great. But ever since the Rams got Odell, like, you know he's going to get it in the end zone. Like, you go, you throw it in the end zone, you know Odell's going to come down with the ball.
Well, and isn't that the biggest critique of the Justin Fields rookie season, is that he did have flashes, he did move the football,
mm-hmm.
but the Bears didn't get into the end zone, right? Their red zone performance, when the Bears would get down there, it would bog down. Now, I wonder how much of that is the vanilla-style offense that Matt Nagy runs, and that he can't script anything to get anyone open into the end zone.
Yeah.
But also, you got to blame the players as well, and Justin Fields was running an offense that couldn't score points.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to put some of that blame onto Justin Fields. And when you look at this whole conversation and we go back to what we saw with the Chargers this year, the Chargers have two excellent wide receivers, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
The Bengals have two excellent wide receivers. In fact, they probably have an elite wide receiver and a good wide receiver, which balances out to excellent, right? So you have Ja'Marr Chase, you have T. Higgins. So when you look at this Bears situation, if you could get a number one wide receiver to assist with Mooney and Justin Fields, now you're cooking. The problem is you don't have a first-round draft pick, so you can't pull what the Bengals pulled, right?
No.
And then if you look at the Chargers situation, they've had Mike Williams and Keenan Allen for quite some time, and it's actually quite disappointing that Keenan Allen, who has always been the comp for Allen Robinson, that Allen Robinson is no longer playing to that same caliber. Because I thought that Allen Robinson was going to be that type of guy for Justin Fields. That's the shame when you look back at Fields' rookie season, is that Allen Robinson really disappeared.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, The Athletic had a mock draft that came out, and they've got the Bears in the second round with their first pick overall in the draft, unless they move up into the first round for something or acquire more picks. The Athletic has them taking George Pickens, the wide receiver out of Georgia, who's good. I don't know if he's a number one, but again, every year you see in the draft, the wide receiver class gets deeper and deeper because in college, it's all spread, it's all fast. Everybody needs to be super fast and go up and get the ball and beat your defender. So there's so many more good wide receivers on these teams. So every year, what's the deepest position in the draft? It's always wide receiver. It's always wide receiver.
And it's just something over the weekend as I'm watching these young quarterbacks. And I know that Herbert wasn't there, but we saw him last at the end of the season. And then we got to see Jalen Hurts just have a terrible game against the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing was kind of blown up from the start, right? Like poor decisions, turnovers, three and outs, the whole thing just avalanched on Hurts. But then you look at Joe Burrow and his setup and being able to come through. Kept thinking about quarterbacks in their second year. What should we expect from Justin Fields when we get to that point next season? It's Black and Abdallah. We're going to preview the Bulls and the Cavs. They have a big night at the United Center. Later on tonight, big game. We'll preview that game coming up next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
We're going to talk Bulls and Cavs in just a moment. Steven Elmwood Park, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Steve?
Hey, I heard you guys talking just a second ago about all the quarterbacks and kind of comparing.
Yeah.
And I bring up like one thing to your attention. I just want to see like what your thoughts are. But when I watch Fields, I see like an awareness issue that like he's not confident, like where he can't see his like side peripheral vision yet. When you compare him to like a Herbert, his timing is way better, Justin. And, like, what happened with Jalen Hurts during the playoffs, it was a timing issue. His timing is way off. They need to really repair his, like, mechanics. But Fields worries me. Like, that's just me. Like, I know he's hyped up. He's first year and so. But he comes from a big school where he had a lot of protection. And I almost feel like I like guys who coming from younger or less known schools, we'll just say, who made a name for themselves. Because you can see that they're not as well protected. They're kind of used to that pressure. And so wanted to see your thoughts.
Yeah. Steve, that's a good call. Thank you for the phone call. My hesitation in answering right away is I wonder how much of this we're going to look back in a year from now when there's someone in here running an offense that knows what they're doing. And we say, you know, Fields was okay. It was Matt Nagy's terrible play calling that put him in situations where he was stuck because he only knew that there was one good option. And if the defense took that one good option away, he didn't really have anywhere else to go. Like, I get Steve's concern. Listen, Justin Fields needs to protect the football. Mm-hmm. He fumbled the football way too many times this season.
Yeah.
You're never going to win as a quarterback in the NFL turning the football over. And I know that the interceptions are not there, but it's all about the fumble for him. But I would say that that's a good thing. Is that if you have a young quarterback who's not throwing a gajillion interceptions throughout the season, you got something there, right? Like Justin Fields, when he selects to go downfield, his accuracy is fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's where the Bears had a lot of big plays. The problem was he held on to the ball too much in the pocket. And when he did hold on to the ball in the pocket, it got stripped. And there were strip sacks and fumbles and too many of those this season.
I think there's definitely a learning curve when you go from a school that has five-star athletes and four-star athletes on the offensive line and at the wide receiver position. And I'm not trying to crap on the Big Ten, but like Ohio State was different, right? Like you're playing against, you know, Rutgers and Illinois and Northwestern, and yeah, you're playing Michigan and all that kind of stuff as well. But I would say for all except the national championship game, Justin Fields was the best player on the field in every single game he played in college. Ohio State was the better team in every single game that he played in, except for the national championship game where Alabama beat them, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, even in games where they weren't, he was the best player on the field. Like, you could argue that Clemson was the better team in their matchup in the college football playoff, but Justin Fields was the best player.
He put up five touchdowns on them. So, like, I mean, you're sitting... So, to me, like... He's going to learn to get rid of the ball faster. He's going to learn. And you saw him. He did progress throughout the season as far as not taking that sack and throwing the ball away. So I think that comes with time. That's rookie mistakes that I bet you would have seen Joe Burrow make before his ACL injury, right? So that might have been part of the reason why he tore his ACL. I don't remember the play specifically, but maybe if you would have gotten rid of the ball quicker.
He got killed last year.
Yeah.
And he, in fact, he still gets hit way too much.
Absolutely.
For a franchise quarterback with that much skill. But the on the flip side, that dude goes down the field.
Oh, for sure.
And he has reckless abandon when it's going deep down the field, especially to Ja'Marr Chase.
So I think that's involved with a different game plan, getting rid of the ball quicker. That I think he's a smart enough player to where he'll pick that up, whoever the new coaching staff is and new system that comes in.
We will talk basketball, but Bruce Feldman from The Athletic just released a article on Jim Harbaugh. And the title of the column says, "Sources inside Michigan think Jim Harbaugh would take the Las Vegas Raiders job if offered." Now, the first paragraph of the article does not necessarily tell you anything new. It's stuff that he's placed before in The Athletic, saying that the Raiders are a spot for Harbaugh because of his longtime friendship with Mark Davis, the team's owner. He also started his coaching career with the team in 2003.
Family,
he also has family ties to Las Vegas, and that's where he met his wife.
Oh.
The second paragraph, "Multiple sources inside Michigan football have told The Athletic." Now, Bruce Feldman's one of the best when it comes to college football reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he writes. "Multiple sources inside Michigan football told The Athletic this week that they think if Harbaugh is offered the Raiders head coaching job, he would take it. They also know that Harbaugh is hard to read, and there are hunches that his hunches could be wrong, but they know that he never coached anywhere longer than 4 years prior to the 7 years and running Ann Arbor to this point. So they believe at some point, if he wants to get back to the NFL, he will jump. He will go to the NFL. And Bruce Feldman's pointing to the Raiders as the option. And that if that job is open and if that's who they want, Harbaugh would listen and he would take that job." And that's new from Bruce Feldman in The Athletic just now.
Yeah, I don't think that's any surprise. I think that, you know, adding new sources to it and saying that, you know, people are hearing inside the building that if he's offered the Las Vegas job, he would take it. But there was also a tweet from a former Michigan player who has connections to the program now. He played for the Jets for a while, who also said that Harbaugh is interested in the Raiders job or the Giants job. What has completely died is connections to the Bears.
Well, and that's where if you're a Bears fan, you got to hear this and say, listen, Jim wants out and he wants to go to the NFL. How do you not at least bring him in? Have him talk to Bill Polian, George McCaskey, and Ted Phillips, the search committee, right? Have them interview Jim and at least find out. Like, there, you can argue that he has not been a great college coach, but you can't argue his merits as an NFL coach.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a fantastic NFL coach. And the thing that I...
10 years ago.
That's fine. He still can do it.
Okay.
And I would point to this. The one thing the Harbaugh teams that are they're known for... It's that they're hard-nosed, they play good offensive and defensive line play, and they run the football.
Yeah.
And that's all stuff that you need to complement a young quarterback.
But here's also what I look at, too. And Kaff has talked about this, and Waddle has talked about this as someone who knows Jim Harbaugh, right? He doesn't care about money. He doesn't care about that kind of stuff. He cares about peace of mind and fit. And if his family is happier in Vegas... and he gets more control over the roster in Vegas, and he has more peace of mind in Vegas, doesn't matter what the Bears throw at him. He's going to go to Vegas. because he just doesn't care. Like, he doesn't care about the contract, doesn't care about the money. If he's looking for where can I have the most influence and where can my voice be the loudest, that might be with the Raiders, because they might give him control over who he hires as GM. Because you heard the rumblings from NFL people this week and college football people this week that as soon as Mike Mayock was let go by the Raiders, that that opened the door even more for Harbaugh, because he could bring in someone he wants to as GM, and he could go and they could have a coach and GM tandem there with someone he knows he can work with. So I don't think that it's necessarily, oh, I played for Chicago, I got to go back and be a coach there. I think he just is looking for the best fit for his family.
No,
and
if I'm not saying that because of a former player connection is why he's the guy. I'm just saying, like, I agree with you. Wherever the most money, wherever a team makes a bid for him, he'll probably end up. Mm-hmm. Because I do agree with you. It's also about the premise. He's not going back to Michigan because they cut his pay in half last year.
Yeah.
His base pay went from $8 million to $4 million, and he won. So, like, at a certain point, you could suggest that a lot of this is to get a new deal from Michigan. But also, if he's a man of principle, why would he want to stay at Michigan? Right? Like, they told him last offseason, you're not good enough to be making what you're making.
Well,
so, go to the NFL, make that, and win, because he's won when he's been in the NFL.
To be fair, though, and yes, the story is true that he did take a pay cut, but he also used all of his bonus money from making the college football playoff and winning the Big Ten, and he gave it away. Sure. Like, he gave it to his assistants and everything like that. So it's not like he was trying to hoard this money. Like, I don't think he cares that they cut his pay in half.
No, but it's the principle of the matter.
Because
right?
Here's the thing. If he cared about them cutting his pay in half, what would have happened is these rumors would have come out and he would have instantly gotten a new contract. Because that's how that works. You get these rumors come out, you sign a new contract.
If he wanted to stay there.
Well,
And that's why the rumors to the Raiders and Bruce Feldman suggesting this once again on The Athletic tonight. The Raiders, I think, is real. It's interesting. The Giants, that's a legendary franchise in the National Football League. They've had a lot of success for a lot of years.
Las Vegas.
They've been bad as of late, looking for a quick turnaround. Jim Harbaugh would be perfect there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Chicago Bears, because this is also a legendary franchise that needs a different direction. And he's the type of guy that could lead this team in a different direction.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that also to maybe he doesn't want to stay, because maybe what we know is that he got an offer from Michigan and he was just like, well, I don't know.
Joe in Oak Forest, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Joe?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So first off, Black, I wanted to know if you ended up calling the cops.
So I'll update everyone on that, okay, Joe?
All right, I got you. So yeah. my thing is this. So you were saying how with Vegas they got rid of their GM too, so it kind of makes it more of an opportunistic situation for Harbaugh. But you said he doesn't care. So I mean, if he doesn't care, he's not worried about the money. He doesn't care what they're putting in front of him. He's cared about his legacy. A legacy would be remembered forever in the history books if he did something even generally close to winning a Super Bowl with the Bears on multiple seasons. He would be remembered forever. And I think, to me, the juice would be worth the squeeze on that more than it would be for going to, I mean, it's almost like Vegas is, they got like, I mean, it's still the Oakland Raiders, but it's a whole new shebang over there. I think he would rather do something with a little bit more history to it.
Well, are you suggesting, just based on the fact that we're in Chicago, so it would mean more to us? Because the Raiders are a legendary franchise as well, who's had a lot of success over the years.
Well, that's why I heard you guys say New York too.
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see it, because I mean, there are some of these marquee franchises that, I mean, they do good. The NFL does better.
I mean, Joe.
Yeah.
The Raiders are a marquee franchise. Yeah, I know that they're in Vegas,
no,
but they're still the Raiders. They're still the Raiders.
Yeah.
They are, but I just feel like since they moved to Vegas, they kind of got
to... I hear you, but it's still the Raiders. Like, it's still the Raiders.
It's also a good debate. Thanks for the call, Joe, because, like, the Oakland Raiders, yeah, the Los Angeles Raiders, they've moved a bunch.
Yeah.
The fandom continues to follow them.
And
fandom from coast to coast, too.
Listen, Black Hole's still there.
Right? Like in the 80s, the 70s, the Raiders have been good for a very long time. So, like, Listen, I get it. The connections to the Chicago are obvious. He played here.
It's still the silver and black.
It's a legendary franchise as well. The Raiders have had more success over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly he has a friendship with Mark Davis.
Well, it's three marquee franchises, right? The Bears, the Giants, and the Raiders.
Yeah, they really are. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, those are three in the last 20 years. Well, no, not with the Giants, but in the last 10 years have kind of fallen out of favor, especially the Raiders and the Bears.
Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Download the podcast of Black and Abdallah on the ESPN Chicago app. Check it out. You don't have the app? Download the app. You can do it on your Android, your iPhone, ESPN Chicago. All of the podcasts are right there. Download Black and Abdallah right through the ESPN Chicago app. Abdallah, tonight at 7 o'clock, we have the Cavs on the road against the Bulls at the United Center. The Bulls are 27-15. The Cavs are 27-18. These are probably the two teams, if you ask someone in the NBA, who's the biggest surprise to this season, they will say one of these two teams. They'd either say the Cavs, which I think is probably the most surprising team to this point in the year, or the Bulls. And the reason being is because some of the conversations we had over the summer, the talent assembled with the Bulls, we thought that they would be a playoff team. We did not think that the Cavs would be this good. And that's why tonight, I think, is an intriguing matchup as Alex Caruso is back finally for the Chicago Bulls.
That's good.
They're going to be missing Zach LaVine and Lonzo Ball for some time going forward still. But hopefully, slowly and surely, some pieces get back together. And the Bulls could hopefully break this four-game losing streak.
Yeah, see, the thing is, like, these past few games, you haven't really been able to take anything away from them. So is it a bad skid? Yeah, I mean, they're playing good teams, but they're not a complete team. So against, you know, the Cavs tonight, and Lonzo Ball and Zach LaVine aren't going to make the three-game road trip that's coming up here against Milwaukee, Orlando, and Oklahoma City. They'll reassess a week from tonight against Toronto when they play their next home game after tonight against Cleveland. So you're not a complete team. You're missing two starters. Like, you're down, you know, 40% of your team. Like, you can't take this team for what it's worth when they're losing. Yeah, they lost to Brooklyn. They lost to Golden State. They lost to Boston. They lost to Memphis. But they also lost with an incomplete team. Would they have beat Boston with Zach LaVine? Maybe. They only lost by two that game. Would they have beaten Memphis with Zach LaVine? Maybe. You know, I mean, Zach LaVine puts in 25 a night, something like that. And so now Brooklyn's a different story. The Golden State's a different story. But I don't think they're as good as those teams yet. I think they're on par with the Memphises and the Bostons, and, you know, Cleveland's very, very surprising this week. So, or this year, I mean. So it'll be interesting to see how they play against Cleveland tonight, down some guys, with Milwaukee without some guys, and Orlando and Oklahoma City, who aren't very good. But, you know, you just want to get these guys back and healthy and make sure this isn't a long-term issue. So hopefully it's just three more games for these guys. It seems like Lonzo's is going to be a little bit longer, because his knee supposedly keeps getting worse. At least that's what Joe Cowley was reporting, that his knee is not getting better as they had hoped.
And that's not good. As you get one guard back, you lose another guy for extended time. And there's nothing like intimate at the moment to figure out with Lonzo going forward. But hopefully he'll be okay. And Nikola Vucevic, I thought his game against the Grizzlies, I thought it was the worst game he's played all season. I know the stat line looked okay. I think he had 10 rebounds, like 6 or 8 points. But he just looked slow up and down the court. Steven Adams was outplaying him. And at no point did he seem sure of himself on the offensive end. And when you're in a spot where you have to start Alphonso McKinney, You have to start, or you're playing, I would assume, 30-plus minutes. You need a guy who's been an all-star in the league previously to show up and hit some buckets, right? Show up and be a contributor on offense. And then that's something we're going to need to see tonight, as the Cavs are good and they're big as well. So Bulls and Cavs, 7 o'clock at the United Center. It's time for the song of the night.
I want to rock!
Hey, turn up the volume and don't touch that dial, because it's time for...
What dial? There's no dial on my phone.
Yeah, it's just an... never mind. Crank the volume, because it's time for Bleck and Abdallah's song of the night.
Yo, later.
Each night around 6:50, we go to the song of the night. Tonight,
yeah.
The Offspring, All I Want from 1997. It's your song of the night.
Look at you.
So glad someone came up with it. It was eating me up inside what this was from, because I love this song. I love The Offspring. And I'm like, I know all the words to this because I love Offspring. But Crazy Taxi.
Yeah.
Hell yes, that video game was awesome. But yeah, this song came out today in 1997. It's off of the album Ixnay on the Hombre, which had this song and Gone Away on it as well. So it's a great album. I listen, old Offspring to me is great. It is great, like that weird mix of like alternative and punk music, where like they have songs like this, but also Gone Away is like not as fast and not as punky, you know what I mean?
They're like the grunge era band that no one really talks about.
Yeah.
Looking back. Because they didn't quite fit into the box like others.
Yeah.
Like Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Stone Temple Pilots, but definitely a great throwback.
Well, and you and I were talking about the when What's His Face had cornrows. Like that was a choice.
That was a weird fad.
That was a choice when Dexter had cornrows from The Offspring.
The Offspring, All I Want. It's your song of the night.
Turn up the volume and don't touch that dial, because it's time for...
What dial? There's no dial on my phone.
Yeah, it's just an... never mind. Crank the volume, because it's time for Bleck and Abdallah's song of the night.
Yo, later.
Why does Abdallah have his Christmas tree still up?